time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello everybody and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up with the Saturday morning sun, pop down the living room for the big old sugary cereal, and watch our favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And this morning, we watched Castlevania.
Blech.
It was good, the intro was.
I'm gonna guess lots of, like, organ and then some guitar, because it's an anime, so...
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of organs, too.
Ooh.
But that comes a little later. Yeah. So the show Castlevania aired in 2017, just came out, created the... It's funny, because the original Castlevania, like, it's kind of unknown who... The specific people who originally created the idea or the, I mean, the video game was produced by Konami originally or created by, but as far as individuals go, not really any clue.
Really? But, that's weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a mystery of Castlevania.
Lost to history.
Exactly. But Warren Ellis, you know, famed comic book writer, is the one who wrote out this series, at least the first season of it. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It was produced by Frederator Studios, Powerhouse Animation Studios, Shankar Animation, Project 51 Productions, and Mua Film. Ran for one season so far, four episodes on Netflix. And for a short synopsis, a vampire hunter fights to save a besieged city from an army of otherworldly creatures controlled by Dracula.
At least in episodes 2 through 4.
I mean, there's a lot that leads up to that, but that's a general synopsis of it.
Yeah.
What's kind of funny about it, and this doesn't really fall into the marshmallow so much, but this was in production for 10 years, roughly.
Whoa.
Well, not necessarily production. Let me just say, like, it was in production hell for 10 years because it was originally pitched to be created back in 2007 to Warren Ellis. He wrote it out and had a script done by 2008. And then they just couldn't find really a spot for it or someone to, you know, buy it. So they were kind of shopping it around and it just ended up in 2012 almost becoming a live action film. And then they dropped that because it wasn't going to be fair to the fan base. And so it just kind of died off for a little while until, you know, 2017 where, well, I guess 2016, 2017, where Netflix kind of grabbed hold of it and was like, yeah, we love it. And it's funny because the original script didn't really change very much from what Warren Ellis had written back in 2008. Maybe some slight updates to fit some Netflix standards, but otherwise it's pretty much the same as it was 10 years ago.
So was it always planned to be an anime, like, at the very beginning, or was it just a treatment for whatever they could do? And then they're like, oh, we'll make it a live action. And then they decided that wasn't working.
Well, I think it was going to be animated originally. And
okay.
In this style, or at least something similar to this style. And then they went over to it becoming a live action feature film. And then they dropped that and came over back to this idea where Netflix grabbed hold of it.
Thank God it didn't get live action because, you know, it would just look like Underworld if they tried to do a live action. You
it would
know?
Just be CG, too CG heavy.
It'd be Underworld, Van Helsing, like combined, and then it would suck.
Yeah, I couldn't really imagine a demon carrying around a baby's corpse in live action. That would be really disturbing. So, Chris, who are some of the actors who played in this animated version?
All right, so the character of Trevor Belmont was voiced by Richard Armitage, who was Thorin Oakenshield in the Hobbit movies. The voice of Alucard was James Callis, who played Gaius Baltar in Battlestar Galactica, the 2003 version, not the older version. The voice of Sifa Belendez was Alejandra Reynoso, who's the voice of Flora in Winx Club. I don't know what that is, but I'm pretty sure it's something for little girls. The voice of Dracula was Graham McTavish. This guy, he was Dante from Dante's Inferno, the game and the movie, which this reminded me so much of the Dante's Inferno anime movie that came out with this game. He voices Loki in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. He played Dwalin in the Hobbit trilogy. And he is also the Saint of Killers in the AMC show Preacher.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The Elder was Tony Amendola, who's had large roles in CSI, Stargate SG-1, Once Upon a Time, and he voices Khadgar in World of Warcraft. The Bishop was Matt Frewer, who voiced Lloyd in the Dumb and Dumber cartoon. I guess that's a thing.
Wow. I don't know why. Didn't know that existed. Now we're going to have to watch it.
I know. Jackal in Gargoyles, the Pink Panther in the 1993 Pink Panther cartoon, and he's had lots of major roles in shows like Eureka, Falling Skies, Olympus, and Orphan Black. And finally, the last character on our list here is Lisa Tepes, who was voiced by Emily Swallow, who's had roles in the television series Southland, The Mentalist, and Adoptable. But many may actually recognize her as playing Amara, aka The Darkness, from Supernatural.
Interesting.
And she was awesome in Supernatural.
So it's a lot of good cast. People. Yeah, a really good cast here.
And why is there a Dumb and Dumber cartoon? Like,
I don't know, but now that you put it out on the table, someone's going to suggest it to us.
I'm not doing it unless someone suggests it, because I don't want to subject myself to it.
Absolutely not.
I don't want to do that to myself.
So for a few tasty marshmallows out of our big bowl of Castlevania cereal, the earliest games borrowed source material from motifs in iconic horror cinema and other monsters from the Universal Horror and Hammer era of films, even going so far as to have the film reel holes at the top and bottom of the first game's title screen. And a lot of people don't notice that, but if you look at the title screen of the very first game, it has those the film reel kind of cutouts at the top and the bottom. And that's because of the inspirations it had from the old horror movies.
Did they get sued for that? Or
No, of course. It's just like a lot of it was like very campy, the original games, before it got really serious and started going kind of more towards the anime route. But,
right.
Yeah, but the original games, I mean, it had, of course, Dracula, and then there was some Frankenstein thrown in there, some Medusas, some Wolfman, various other things that were inspired by those old horror movies. So I appreciated that about it.
That's awesome.
The series that we watched is based on the events that occurred in Wallachia in 1476, as told in Castlevania III, Dracula's Curse, video game for the NES, where Trevor Belmont is the main protagonist. This was published by Konami in Japan in 1989 and North America in 1990. So it's funny because this is based on a game from 1989 that was originally supposed to be made 10 years ago, the series was, and then only now is it coming out. So that's, how long ago is 89 from, that's almost 30 years ago. So, and this is pretty obvious, but maybe some people don't know. And if you don't, and even if you do know, maybe you don't know the origin of it. So if you take the name Alucard and spell it backwards, then of course it's Dracula. But this happens in the game as well. This happens in the game as well, and it's a direct reference to a scene in Son of Dracula where Alucard was played by Lon Chaney Jr.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's a film back from 1943, but I think that's right. The origin of the usage of Alucard. Of course, it's also known in Helsing, the anime, if anyone's familiar with that. Alucard, spelled backwards, Dracula, for people who don't know.
So if you're dyslexic, you would just be like, it's just Dracula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Chris, what memories do you have of Castlevania, just in general, I guess, because this series literally just came out?
I don't have a lot because I never really played the games. I generally knew what it was about. But the most exposure I've really had is watching the Game Grumps play it, honestly, on their channel. And then their band, Starbomb, did a song that was like kind of like a spoof of Monster Mash, but it was about Simon Belmont, like basically going into Dracula's castle and like horribly killing everybody as like the monsters are trying to have their party. So it's really funny. If you haven't heard it, you have to find it. It's great. But that's where I was confused, because I had always thought that the main character was Simon Belmont. But now I'm wondering, because this was based off of Castlevania 3, right?
Mm, yeah.
If maybe Simon was, maybe he was in 1 and 2. But I think, like, I just have a really basic understanding of the lore. And I think that Trevor is actually supposed to be Simon's ancestor. So maybe, I don't know. I'm very confused as to how that all goes, but
Trevor, at least at this point, is the last son of the Belmont family, and Belmonts in general are just this line of individuals who were monster hunters born and bred, basically, and they've all been hunting monsters to some degree. Simon, I don't know that Simon was the first of them, but he came definitely before Trevor did.
Okay.
And this is actually not the first time to see an animated Belmont, because if you remember Captain N, the Game Master, that old cartoon. Simon Belmont was in that, actually.
Nice.
It was way different. He was a really goofy character, but in a way that was almost a nod to the campiness of the original games, I guess.
So what about you, sir?
Yeah, for me, like, I mean, I've known about this franchise from about as far back as I can remember, at least as far back as I've had an NES or a Nintendo, because I think the original game came out, I think, in 87, so we were like 2 years old, so literally I grew up with this franchise, and but I didn't know that it was going to be made into a series until maybe a month or two ago, whenever it was kind of, I'm sure it was announced beforehand, but I didn't know about it until it was like almost about to come out. And then I got super excited about it and watched it the first day it came out. And then I watched it again so that it would be fresh on my mind for this. So yeah, I like Castlevania. I was excited about it.
I could tell because like the day it came out, you were already texting me because you had already watched like the first episode. And I swear it had only been out for like an hour. And you're like, oh my God, it's so awesome.
It was. I mean, It's just like, and I can understand like reservations going into it because a lot of video game based anything, movies, anime shows, whatever, are just not good, just really not good. And this really kind of breaks the mold for me, at least. I think you and I were talking about this the other day. Like, this is the first one I can think of, really. And maybe there's others that I can think of that has really been this, like, knock it out of the park good.
No, like, I was reading an article that said this is the most successful, like, in terms of viewership and critics, the most successful adaptation of a video game ever. And, you know, you had raised, like, Resident Evil and stuff like that, but as far as critics go and everything, this has scored dramatically higher than any of the Resident Evil movies ever did.
Yeah, I mean, I know Resident Evil is a popular franchise as far as the films go. I don't care for the movies, but I know a lot of people did. Maybe a lot of people. I don't know. Apparently a lot of people because they keep making them.
Yeah, I guess. I heard they're going to reboot it again because I guess they ended it and now they're going to do a reboot. And
yeah, I heard that too.
What was it? Mila that stars in it was just like, why? Why are you doing this?
I think
if she doesn't even want it, like, man.
It's just beating a dead horse at this point. That's
how I spend my Fridays.
What's so cool, and I mean, we'll get into the episodes in a second, but what's so cool is that Netflix is just killing it with animation. Like, whenever I hear about, like, a cartoon on Netflix now, like, I'm excited to watch it. At least as long as it's not, like, a super kiddie show like Winx Club or whatever it was you said.
What's wrong with Winx Club, man?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's awesome. Maybe I'm completely misjudging it, but so far, like, Netflix has been great just as far as cartoons are concerned.
Yeah, pretty much, like, everything Netflix does knocks it out of the park, with the exception of maybe Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah.
Iron Fist wasn't great, unfortunately. It's maybe sad because that's one of my favorite Marvel characters. But pretty much everything that Netflix has their hands in is amazing.
Stranger Things.
Yes.
Season 2.
Coming soon.
So I guess let's just get into it. And we're not going to do this the way we usually do because normally we do, you know, first we do three episodes, first, highest rated, and listener chosen. But since there are only four episodes, we just watched the whole thing. And we can essentially treat it like we do our movies because if you calculate it out, they're about 22 minutes long each. You know, multiply that by four, that's about 88 minutes. So roughly, you know, hour 28 minutes, hour 30 minutes. So
that's movie length.
It's a movie. So we'll treat this like a movie and just start talking about it.
Oh, real quick. For everyone listening, if you haven't watched it yet, spoilers. Lots of spoilers.
Yeah.
This is spoilers all over, like, your face. Like, spoilers are in your ear, like, dripping out.
On your chest, everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere you can imagine. There is a spoiler. It's splattered all over the wall.
I'm glad you said that, because we didn't really spoil anything up to this point, so.
Yeah, this is worth watching, so please watch this before you listen to this podcast. But make sure you listen to this podcast right afterwards.
Yeah, please do that, too. We're not trying to dissuade you from listening, but you should watch it first for a pure reaction to it.
We're going in.
All right, jumping in.
That's my siren. That's
your what is that, a foghorn?
I guess, my spoiler siren. So this first episode is, one of these is not like the other. This is very different than the next three because this episode is just kind of leading you. It's like setting the stage for everything that's going to come. So we don't really see much of the main character till like the very, very, very last frame of like the end of the first episode. But this is introducing you to Dracula and actually, more importantly, Lisa, who is like the catalyst for everything that happens in this series.
It's an interesting introduction, too, because it seems a lot, like, it seems like coming into it, it's going to be very, not very lighthearted, but kind of lighthearted because of the way they're interacting with each other, almost flirtatiously, with Lisa talking to Dracula and kind of talking to him in ways that other people wouldn't, you know, be brave enough to. I mean, not only does he rarely get visitors to his own castle, but especially not someone who's so frank with him. So he kind of automatically is respecting her, just her candor, I guess.
And at this point, like, Dracula isn't like, I mean, he's feared, but he's kind of left alone, I think. You know, it's not like a everyone lives in terror of him right now.
Right.
It's more like a, yeah, there's a lot of like rumor and mystery about him and everyone's a little freaked out by him. And he lives in this big castle that's kind of up this hill and they're just like, we're not even going to touch it. But people, you know, there's rumors that he's immortal. They drop some hints that he was Vlad the Impaler. They don't come out and say it, but they kind of hint at it. And you do see like some corpses impaled on spikes and things like that. So I guess people that have gone up there don't come back.
Yeah.
But Lisa comes right up there and she, the reason that she comes up there, and I like this, is that so Dracula in this knows science, which I think is interesting because that is pretty unlike any other iteration of Dracula I've ever seen. But he's scientific. He has electricity in his castle and no one else has electricity. So Lisa comes up there and because she wants to learn science because she knows there's more to life. She wants to be a doctor and she wants to learn, like, you know, alchemical science so she can save lives, so she can help people. Even though the church, which is huge in the area, thinks anything that isn't prayer is pretty much witchcraft.
Yeah.
So she can't learn medicine from anyone else. So she goes to him and she's not intimidated at all. Like, she's not taking his crap because he tries to intimidate and scare her and she's not having it.
Yeah.
And then they end up kind of flirting a little bit, like you said.
Yeah. She even ends up like stabbing a bat like on her way in. Like, she doesn't care. Like, she's very driven. She's a very driven woman and she shows him that immediately. And she realizes, or she knows, as you said, that he does machines. And so she's wanting to learn from him and figure out ways to, you know, improve her medical practice because she's very limited in what she can do given the restrictions of the church, like you said.
The next scene we see of her, or the next thing we see at all, is like she's tied to a post. And like the whole city's around her and they're like, she's on a pyre and they're burning her alive.
This is also 20 years later. Let's say that.
Okay. Yeah. 20 years later. So we don't see what happens within the 20 years. We just see, I guess she came down from the castle. She's learned things. She tried to help people. The church is like, nope. And is trying to set her on fire and kill her. And this is like, dude, this almost choked me up a little bit. Because I was just like, no, because she was so sweet and she just wants to help everybody. And she starts crying out saying, like, please don't hurt them. They don't understand. They're afraid. They don't understand. She keeps saying it. And the stupid bishop or whatever is just like, she calls out to Satan and stuff. And
yeah,
I'm like, no, she's telling Dracula, like, they don't get it. Don't take revenge on them, please.
Yeah, they don't understand, you know, they're very ignorant to science as a whole. It's all the devil's work or witchcraft. So
yeah, I mean, if you're familiar with, like, you know, how witches were treated in old Europe and stuff like that, this is pretty much exactly the same thing.
This is a fictional country of Wallachia, so it's not like it's the basis of it, of course, is very similar to our true life events, but this is a fictional country from the video game. And here, you know, you say they're trying to burn her, but she's already on fire and this stake is already burning.
It just takes a while for her to burn.
It does take a while. Yeah. She gets to scream out a lot and say a lot before she's done. But we see, I think it's actually as she burns up into an ash that it switches over, transitions to Dracula's point of view.
Yes.
And here he's walking, he's just kind of walking down the road, and we see that he has a wedding ring on. So that shows us that he is now wed to Lisa.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't expect that. That threw me for a loop, and I was like, no, this makes it even worse.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the reason he's walking and not, you know, flying around like vampires do is because Lisa says that if he wants to share, you know, his life with her as a human, then he too should, you know, act as a human would and, you know, walk the world like a human. And so out of respect for her, he is doing so. Like, he's not flying around or teleporting or whatever. He's just walking around the countryside and, you know, coming to find her. Reaches her house, which has been burned down already, finds this woman who's leaving like a flower there for her because she was always really nice to her. And she's like, okay, well, you know, where is the church holding her? And the woman's just like, and this made me sad. She's just like, no, like she's already going to be dead by now. Like it's too late. Now I'm just here mourning her loss. And man, this is where Dracula goes from pretty cool guy to fearsome, and we kind of deserve it.
Well, dude, this was a tough scene too, because like it wasn't like he didn't jump straight to like furious anger. Like, dude was seriously in mourning. Like, he was crying.
Oh, crying
blood. Instead
of
tears, he has blood come down his eyes, which I thought was great, because Bloody Tears, that's the name of one of the songs from the Castlevania soundtrack.
No, nice.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, Bloody Tears, nice. I know more about the soundtrack of the game than I know of the game.
That's awesome.
But, and what was cool was because she was, the old woman was there mourning her, he like goes off in this rage, but says that out of kindness and because Lisa, you know, was the person she was, he's going to spare the old woman, but everybody else is forfeit. And he just, man, it's crazy because he turns into this big old like plume of fire and like just has this face in the fire, and it's just full of rage and anger and hate.
Yeah. And he's just, he comes to the group, basically the pier where she was just burnt on. Like, he comes and has this large head of flame. And of course the churchgoers believe it's Satan at first. And Dracula is just like, you know, what have you done? And like, he gives them the time to make peace with their God or whatever they want, whatever they need to do before he wipes out all life from Wallachia and everything they've ever created. And so he's basically going to purge Wallachia of all human existence because of this thing that they have done. And he gives them a year to do it while he gathers his demon army.
That was cool too. I mean, because, well, they made Dracula such a sympathetic character in this way.
Oh yeah.
And I like that because the best villains are sympathetic, because it's, you know, it's too easy to hate a guy that's just pure evil. But this guy, like, obviously he wasn't pure evil. He had some good to him. He had some humanity. And they stripped it from him here. And then now he's just pure vengeance. And even though that happens, he still gives them a year to leave.
He's going to wipe everything in Wallachia out anyway. So they have a choice to leave or stay behind. And before it cuts to the next, you know, the year later scene, we see him back at his castle talking about how he's going to summon his demon horde and all of this. And then we see someone come through the door and basically begging him to spare them. And even if this is what you want, it's not what mother would want. And and so we find here that this is Dracula and Lisa's son,
Alucard.
Yeah, Alucard. And it goes into the scene where, you know, they start to fight, or at least Dracula rushes towards them. We just see like a spray of blood, and then it cuts to a year later. So it's like, well, Alucard wasn't successful right here. So let's see what happens now.
So like a year later, they have like this big old gathering outside the church, and the bishop's out there and stuff. And he's giving this big old speech about, you know, he's like, we burned this witch a year ago and she called Satan, and people claim they saw Satan. And obviously it was just, you know, it was all a farce because, you know, nothing's happened. Well, as he's like talking, Dracula pops back up in the air And he's just like, told you so.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it just basically tells him, you had your year, you chose not to flee, now you're all gonna die. It starts raining blood, and then in the rain, like, these little, like, demon fetuses are, like, falling to the ground.
Uh-huh.
And then, and basically then all of a sudden all these demons just come flying out of everywhere and just ripping people to shreds. It is so gory. It went way past where I thought it was gonna go.
Yeah, it gets brutal real fast. Like, you don't expect it coming into the episode because this doesn't happen till almost the very end of it. And you're like, yeah. Whoa. So, okay, now I know what we're in for.
Yeah, there's entrails everywhere. There's heads getting ripped apart. Like, I mean, split down the middle. And
like I said, babies being carried off, like bloody baby corpses. No holds barred. So let me say this. Carter, if you're listening to this, you probably should not watch this show. Not yet. Wait until you're a little older because it is gruesome.
Anyone like under the age of 13, you probably shouldn't watch it. Even like 13 to, I don't know. What is rated R now? Is that 17?
Not R, it'd be MA because it's TV.
Oh, okay.
So but I don't know what the actual like age range of MA is.
I don't know either, but it's definitely for adults. There's lots of language, lots of gore. If you have a weak stomach, this is not for you.
No, not at all. You know what? Before we move on, like, I liked the way that the archbishop was talking about all this, because he was like, claiming the devil as a liar and stuff. And he's like, what do we expect from the devil and all that? And then talking about how he's never felt more blessed by God. And then it all just turns so quickly right then. So I loved the contrast of that, or the juxtaposition of the way he was talking about it. And then the exact opposite, essentially raining hell down on this land.
Right. Well, and that's, like, I like that, too, because, I mean, that's something we can relate to, right? Because, I mean, like, people in power that are totally hypocritical or just completely pushing an agenda and not caring about facts. Obviously, we're used to that where we live. So it's definitely something that I related to. And seeing this was kind of like a nice little, like, yeah, get them. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't want to root for people like being horribly slaughtered, but it's like, you know, there's a level of frustration in the real world that you get. So when you see something like that in this cartoon, you're just like, ah, finally, at least somebody's getting what's coming to them.
It's just interesting in a way, rooting for the villain. It's like you said, the sympathetic villain, where you understand where they're coming from.
Right. I mean, it's just like TV shows like Dexter's. A classic example. I mean, he's a murderer, but you root for him through the entire series. So
yeah, well, true. The Dracula is talking to the demons and saying, like, I mean, from the sky, he's essentially just a cloud right now, and he's saying, kill everything you see, you know, kill for my love, all of this. And so it's kind of like he's gone over the deep end at this point, and understandably so after what they put him through.
Well, and the last scene of this episode is we see a nearby village or something, and there's a tavern there, and there's these guys like in there. They're kind of drunk and they're kind of talking and saying stuff that I'm not going to repeat because it's really gross, and it has to do with
goats, but
with a goat and a certain act. But
and
we see Trevor Belmont kind of over in the corner drinking a beer.
So as far as the location of this, what my understanding of it is, so we've got the primary city, the main city that this is happening in, where the church is. Then we've got Greget, which is the next city over. And then in between those cities is kind of this tavern. Like, I don't think this tavern is located in either of those cities. I think it's just kind of on the path between, kind of as a stopping point.
Right. And the so the archbishop was the one that was giving that speech. We find out in the next episode that the bishop, not the archbishop, but the bishop, the one that had the wife burned at the stake, is now in Greget.
Yes.
And that is where Trevor is at the moment, too. So, like, this next episode picks up back in that tavern with Trevor and these guys, and the guys they're low class, they're very unintelligent, and they're brutes, and they're getting drunk.
Never a good combination.
No, never a good combination. And they're very much, they're kind of talking about how they hate people from the higher class, because they're always putting them down, and they can't get anywhere in life because all the money's somewhere else. But then they start talking about the Belmonts being the worst of them because they think that, well, I guess, like, there's been demons. Like, demons aren't a new thing. I guess demons have really been around, but maybe they haven't been around as much as of late until this thing with Dracula started. But they kind of start blaming the Belmont family for all the troubles and stuff because I guess the Belmonts have been fighting demons and monsters and stuff like that for generations. Mm-hmm. So I guess the idea is that wherever the Belmonts are, death is there because that's where the demons are. And that's when, like, Trevor's like, I kind of get the feeling that he overheard this and he kind of wanted to start something, but he was going to let them notice him first before he said anything. So he goes up to order a beer. He's obviously drunk too, but he lets, like, his cloak kind of falls open and you can see the Belmont crest on his chest.
Yeah, this is what leads to at least the main guy, the main antagonist here in the group, like, noticing the Belmont crest, calling him out on it. And he's denying it at first and saying, you know, he just found it somewhere or got it from somebody or something like that. But then, you know, the Belmonts have been excommunicated by the church, so that he shouldn't be here. And he's part of the cause of all this trouble in this guy's mind. And so he starts picking a fight with them. And, you know, Trevor Belmont is, as you said, he's drunk also. So he's, you know, happy to oblige. And really, he's not a pacifist by any stretch of the imagination. He's not afraid to hurt people badly if necessary.
He even, like, he kicks one of them in the junk at one point. Funny.
He's a dirty fighter too.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he's fighting them off, knocking them all over. He's staying. At one point he proclaims, like, you know, Trevor Belmont, you know, drunk Trevor never loses a fight to man or beast. Right. And that's then, right. At that point he gets hit in the back with a chair and it kind of cuts from there.
But, does Trevor remind you of any other fictional character?
I bet
there's
a
very specific one that he reminds me a lot of.
I bet if you say it, then I will agree with you, but I can't think of it.
Jack Sparrow.
I can agree with that.
Yes. He's like a deadlier, angrier version of Jack Sparrow and that he's goofy. And he kind of, like, even in this fight, like, he can take these guys, but he kind of goofs around with it a little bit, and he takes some hits, too.
We see him get hit with the chair, and then it transitions to the next scene. And so at this point, we're like, well, did he lose or what? But then he leaves the bar, and I guess he's probably bloodied them all up or knocked them all out or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because he when he leaves, he says, well, I hope they don't bleed to death, basically. So they're probably laying there bleeding. But he is still super hungry. I mean, he's used most of his money to finish getting those drinks. And then he leaves and he goes over to the nearby town, which is Greget. And at this point, he's just looking for food, just looking for something to eat. When he comes outside, he does throw up and stuff because he is super drunk and just got in a bad fight. So we're seeing in this other town, it transitions there for a bit to where we see the demons, you know, carrying the corpses and the bloody stuff happening all around. He goes down to Greget. And I think at this point, they've kind of reached Greget, the demons have, but it's only something that happens at night. The demon hordes don't come out until nighttime. So the people have time to prepare during the day, or at least to survive during the day and go about their lives.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like maybe there's been, like, maybe two attacks so far.
Yeah.
So that, like, to the point where everybody knows that the demons are there, but not everybody has left, and there's still, like, there's still a lot of people alive in the town, but a good majority of them have been killed.
Yeah, but there's reason for that, and we'll talk about that in a second, that the people are still there. But so Trevor ends up going down and, like, climbing into Greget through this sewer pipe after, you know, a bunch of crap comes out of it. And
that was really gross.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason he does that, too, is because the walls of Greget, or, like, the entrances, have been barricaded.
Right. To keep the demons from coming in as best as possible, even though most of the demons can fly. So it's really kind of a moot point. But so, like, he comes in, he starts, what's cool about this part is, like, when he's looking for food, he starts talking to people like you would in video games, where you're just kind of chatting with the locals to find out some information.
And I thought of that too. I like that.
Yeah. Like, he learns about the tribe of speakers, which we'll talk about. He learns about the sleeping soldier legend, which we'll talk about. You know, so it's basically picking up all these little hints of things to come.
So there's some history there with him and the church. And I guess the Belmonts are kind of like have been outcast from the church and they're not allowed certain places. The church has like these agents basically that they're like priests, but they have been trained to fight and kill. They're basically assassins.
Yeah.
Posing as priests. He sees them attacking this elder.
Yeah, the elder speaker.
They kind of like they're attacking the guy and they're going to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And so Trevor steps in and he takes out his whip and he like whips this one dude in the hand so hard that the dude's fingers fall off.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, sick.
Yeah, he loses one of his fingers. And Trevor says he was just trying to like grab the whip with his right. or grab the cane that he was going to stab him with his whip.
You can't tell with him if he's serious or not. Like, it could be because he's drunk. It could be him just using an excuse because he was actually going to take the guy's finger off anyway.
Right. But he could be a little out of practice, which is, I think, what he says. But in actuality, he probably meant to take his finger off.
Right. Yeah. You can't tell with him because he's that kind of character.
He's almost like, in a way, not to the degree of clumsiness or whatever, Vash the Stampede, in the sense that he is like super accurate at what he does and so skilled at it, but you wouldn't know it just by his demeanor.
And I like that about him too, because he's kind of, I mean, Trevor is kind of a scumbag, you know?
He's
kind of a jerk. He's kind of a horrible person. But you still root for him anyway. And he's in the gray. He is like, I don't know, like if this was D&D, at the moment he'd be chaotic neutral and eventually he becomes kind of chaotic good. But
yeah, sure.
But
yeah, because it does seem like a lot of times he's only out for himself, but then he shows a lot of compassion, not in necessarily a compassionate way. But
it's like selective compassion.
Exactly. Like he has a good heart, you think. So again, it's very hard to tell.
Sort of.
Yeah.
And like the other guy, so there's the skinnier guy that kind of comes after Trevor a few times in this series, but here he whips this guy again and whips the guy's eyeball out of his socket.
Yeah. Like
I was whoa, gross.
He's just messing around with him at first. Like he like puts the whip around his legs and like trips him. And
he just keeps dodging his attacks like it's nothing. Like he's just toying with the guy before he takes his eye out.
Yeah. And like he gives him a chance essentially to stop after he saw the guy whip his finger off. After he saw him whip his finger off, the other guy's finger off, but he's just like driven to do this. Like he's this little assassin with his like thief dagger or whatever. And gets his eye whipped right out.
When he rescues the Elder Seer, the dialogue between them and some of the dialogue between him and the assassins that are kind of fighting, you kind of find out a little bit about his family and what happened. And which is that the Belmonts were stripped of their lands, their wealth, of everything by the church because the Belmonts were so capable and successful at fighting demons, but the church wanted to do it their own way and the church wanted glory. So anyone else that was kind of like competing for that glory was basically stripped of everything and excommunicated.
Yeah, he says like even on his best of days, like he does not like the church. And so the elder speaker having been saved, he essentially like violence wasn't necessary, but, you know, I'm still thankful that you did this. He takes him back to the area that the speakers are all staying right now.
And explain what the speakers are exactly.
So the speakers, you can kind of think about it in a video game sense too, where it's people that they have all of this history essentially inscribed to their minds. They don't really have books or any kind of writing of it. They just are inscribing it into their minds, and the only way it comes out is through their speech. And that's why they're speakers, is because they will share with you knowledge of history or any kind of event, really, that they've memorized.
Well, part of the reason that the church is against the speakers is because the church is very pro alternative facts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they want the public to believe very specific things, but the speakers know the truth. And when the speakers speak the truth, the church doesn't like it. So the church has been systematically like eliminating speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And that elder was basically next when Trevor stepped in and saved him.
And at this point, you've got a large gathering of speakers in one place. So the church's obvious plan is to have them taken out. But the reason that they put on it is because the speakers, basically they're telling the civilians that it's the speaker's fault that the demons are here. And once right. they are eradicated, then the demons will also go away.
And this is all from that bishop that was there when everything went down anyway. So the bishop knows the real story.
Right.
But he's using what he knows against the speakers. And he's, you know, yeah, he's lying to the town and everything, basically, and his followers and everything, you know, putting the blame on them so he can basically achieve his agenda without having to lift a finger.
This bishop is pure evil. Like, if you think Dracula's bad after, you know, Lisa dies, this bishop is just straight up evil. Like, he has no redeeming qualities about him.
Well, and so when Trevor gets back and he's like, basically, he talks to the speakers a little bit and he's realizing the speakers, you know, are good people. They have a history with the Belmonts. You know, at one time, the speakers were friends to the Belmonts, so he has real no ill will towards them. But the speakers are like just adamant that they're going to stay in town. And he's like, you got to leave. The demons are going to come. You have to leave. He's like, I don't really give a damn about anybody else, but you guys are good people. You should leave town. And the elder basically says, no, his grandchild went somewhere with a group of other people to find this warrior that's been sleeping for centuries or something like that. Because this warrior is supposed to be like a promised one that's gonna basically deliver them from Dracula and the demons and stuff like that. And the grandchild never came back. And so he's like, we're not leaving until we recover the body or find out what the fate of my grandchild was. So he's trying to convince them it's not working. And then he says, if I go find grandson. He goes, if I go find your grandson, will you leave? And they agree. So that's kind of where that episode ends.
Yeah. And it's in the catacombs. Like, it's in this mausoleum, catacombs that this, I guess these ruins are located, where the sleeping soldier supposedly is. And something else that is kind of a recurring thing that happens at least once more in the series is Trevor is saying, like, because the speakers are telling him, like, you know, the people don't know any better, like, they couldn't do anything about this. And he's saying, you know, ordinary people standing aside and doing nothing is what lets things like this happen. Like, everyone has a choice and everyone right. can change what's going on. And this is stated at least one other time in the series, and I don't think it's by Trevor again. I can't remember who said this the second time, but I think once we get there, I took notes on it, so... That jumps us over to the third episode of the series. It's basically the hunt for this grandchild in a way, also the sleeping soldier.
He goes in the catacombs. I like this. I thought this was kind of cool. And he's almost kind of like, he shows some detectiveness in a way where he goes down there, he finds this unlit torch, and then he notices that the oil is fresh by like smelling it and stuff. And one thing he does that's cool is he scrapes his dagger along the wall right next to the torch, and the spark lights the torch. And I was like, oh, that was kind of sweet.
Yeah. Like, again, it reminds me kind of video games. Like, when you're looking for like a secret passage or something, like, he's walking through this room that looks like it has no other like doors or exits through it. And as he's walking past this wall, he sees like one part of the wall like not moving, and he's able to see that there's a gap there that he can slide through. And right. so he jumps through that, and that, you know, takes him kind of down this concrete slide to a lower level of these catacombs.
Oh, and one thing that I really like is at one point he like falls through a floor. But then he lands on his feet and he says, reflexes like a cat, and then immediately falls through another floor and just like falls straight on his back. And he's like,
Well, we see some electric lights like. This point, there's no electricity, of course, because it's, you know, 1400s or whatever in this period. And so we see these like electric lights start lighting up, which he later refers to as torches that light themselves.
Right.
Which I thought was cool.
But we know they're like electricity and stuff.
But the only person with this sort of knowledge, this sort of science, would, of course, be Dracula. So this is obviously connected to Dracula in some way.
Exactly, because the only other person that would have known was Lisa, and she's dead, so.
And so this is what starts he sees a speaker statue with the hood on and everything, so he's assuming this is the grandchild, And at that moment, like, this giant Cyclops comes out, which looks awesome. And then,
oh yeah, it was terrifying.
Yeah, we see it, like, you know, and this is kind of like a more of a video game thing than it is really like mythology, because I don't know that Cyclops is and any kind of mythology are known to do this, but this is a stone-eyed Cyclops where it shoots this beam out of its eye, and if it touches you, you turn to stone, which is what has happened to this speaker.
Like, it hits his cloak at one point, and part of his cloak turns to stone, and he just breaks it off real quick so it doesn't, like,
spread,
weigh him down.
Yeah, well, oh, and that, yeah.
And then he finally, like, stabs it through the eye, and that kills the thing.
But the sequence of events that happens to get it to stab him in the eye is great. Like, it's in his heart. He uses his whip to, like, whip himself up, pull the dagger out, and then kind of flip it around, and I think he ends up kicking it or something, and that's
yes.
what like launches it into the Cyclops' eye. So it's not just that he like throws it in there, like it's a yeah. whole big thing, and then he ends up shooting it into his, or you know, knocking it into his eye, which is what of course will kill the Cyclops since nothing else seems to. And then at that point we learn that the only way to free his stoned victims of their entrapment is to kill him. And then once he's dead, they start to turn back to humans. And so this statue of the speaker starts to fall over. So Trevor goes over to catch it, so it doesn't shatter and kill the person inside of it. And that's when he learns, because the hood comes off, that it ended up being a woman. And so at that point, he's kind of like, I wish speakers would stop doing that, like dressing their women like men. But apparently it's a survival thing, because, you know, other people won't know that it's a woman and won't try to like prey on her or anything.
And and this character is Sifa, and she's awesome. I love this character so much. She was maybe like, I like Trevor a lot, I like Dracula a lot, but I think she might be my favorite so far. I don't know. She was pretty awesome.
She's very also a strong woman.
He takes her back to where her grandfather and the other seekers are. And they're all like, yay. And then he's like, all right, you got to leave. And they're like, we'll see.
Yeah.
And then he's like, whatever. And he goes looking for beer. But when he leaves, like, he's met by all those like assassin priests and a bunch of other people. And they basically say that he's been summoned to the church. So, and then he's confronted with that bishop, the one that was, that put Lisa to death. And God, this guy is evil. He's so evil.
Yeah, but he, knowing the power that Trevor has, he's essentially giving him an out, saying, like, basically leave all this behind, forget any of this happened, and you can live. Like, that's the gift that we're giving you.
Because I don't think he really wants a real confrontation with Trevor.
Yeah, exactly. And he, as Trevor leaves the church, he is essentially saying, like, you know, the citizens are going to do whatever I ask in God's name, and with everything going to hell around us, I will be the church. So he's going to be like the ultimate leader in his mind.
Right. And he also does say that the speakers will die.
Yeah.
And basically he tells them that the townsfolk are coming tonight to kill all of them.
And then, yeah. And then they're saying like, you know, we have to stay, blah, blah, blah. The same excuses they were using. He's just like, no, you're leaving right now. And then it cuts to the next scene.
Of showing like the townsfolk breaking in the door, and Trevor's the only one in there.
Exactly. So we don't know what's happened to them yet. But
there's a great scene that shows it though, and it made me laugh.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What is that scene happen in this episode?
Yeah. Yeah. So like the townsfolk break in. They're there. Trevor's there, and he's like, where are they? And he's like, somewhere safe. And they keep demanding where they are. But when he says somewhere safe, it cuts to all the seekers are back in the catacombs with the dead Cyclops. But even though this show is so dark and gory, and there's so many horrible things, there's so many funny moments.
Surprisingly, like somehow they managed to pull it off.
Yeah. And it's not just a fleeting like, it's like, it's genuinely like you're going to laugh out loud.
Yeah. But it works well with the world. Like, it doesn't feel like, it's
it's not forced. It feels
exactly.
It feels perfect.
Yeah. And so that's what kind of ends this episode, or I guess him, you know, Trevor kind of fighting his way out.
Yeah. He fights some of the townsfolk. He fights a bunch of those priest assassin guys again. There's some archers up on these rooftops, and they start firing down at Trevor. And Trevor grabs the one whose eye he whipped out earlier. he grabs him and aims him like towards one of the archers, and his other eye gets struck by an arrow. Yeah. I was like, oh God.
Yeah, so he's systematically taking out all of these priests who are fighting against him. And at that point, it's like it's hit sundown where the demons are starting to fly in.
Well, and what was awesome here too is because during all of this, I guess Sifa left the catacombs and she's up on a rooftop, and she apparently knows magic. And this is going into the next episode. She knows magic and like shoots fire down that like kind of surrounds him and separates him from the town folk. And then she uses it to kind of make a path so that he can run away from them safely and they can't get to him. But yeah, that's when like the demons and stuff like that start showing up right around this time.
Yeah. And then so Sifa, she has separated him out, but then he stops to kind of speak with the priest and the people, saying like, you know, the only one here who isn't innocent is you, to one of these head priests. And then essentially he says it in such a way where he starts the citizens rioting against the priests themselves, because he's convinced them that they don't have their best interest at heart. So At that point, I think one of the citizens actually comes up and stabs one of the priests and starts that kind of revolt. But as this, you know, demon invasion is still going on, so he quickly teaches the civilians kind of some secrets to kill demons, which is, you know, salt, holy water, and I guess ice in a way. Not necessarily will that kill them, but it's better to use than fire against a demon.
Well, I think like, so Sifa was, she could make ice, and I don't know if she created it out of thin air or if she froze the holy water. So she creates an ice, these two ice walls, and so the demons have to kind of funnel through it. It's basically the 300 tactic. So you've heard the story of, you know, not just the movie, but the historical story of the 300 Spartans that held that passage, because they held this narrow passage, and the only way that the enemy was going to get through is if they go through this passage, and they were there waiting. So they funneled them in, and it was easier for the Spartans to kill them. So this is what they're doing with the demons. They're funneling the demons through. Sifa throws up ice on either side, and when one of the demons touches it, it burns him. So they can't climb over the ice or anything like that. They have to go through. And Trevor had instructed any townsfolk that had like pitchforks, lances, anything long, he had them dip it in salt and then form a line at the front. So when the demons rush forward, all they had to do was bring their poles up, and the demon would impale itself there, and it would be stuck and it would get injured because of the salt. And then people would run up with the shorter weapons like swords and stuff, and then they would hack the demons apart, which was like, it was so cool because it wasn't just, you know, a straight up fight. It was very tactical, and it was like, man, Trevor knows exactly what he's doing. Like, this guy could fight a war.
Yeah, and we also see him whip one of the demons, or a couple of the demons,
yes.
And the demon at this point, like, once they get hit with the whip, they just explode. And
that was awesome.
He explains, like, that the whip has been consecrated for killing vampires and demons, so this is why this is happening.
Well, and there's this one specific demon that's kind of prevalent to the whole group, and as he's talking, like, you know, he's saying something basically about how he's, like, Trevor can't win and he's going to die. As the guy's talking, Trevor just whips him in the face and blows him up.
Oh, like, yeah, like, whips
right
him in
the middle
in
of
half.
The guy's speech.
Yeah. Oh, but before all that happens, even, like, at the beginning of the last episode, we see the bishop praying in the church, and then we see the door open, and it's dark in there, so he's just like, you know, have the speakers all been killed? And we hear the demon say just, like, no, and the priest is like, I like this part a lot, because the priest is like, you know, you can't enter the house of God, and the demon just like, God's not here. Like, this is an empty box. Like, your God's not here to protect you.
Oh,
His love
man.
Is not unconditional. And God does not love us, and He does not love you. And so it's basically like a bunch of stuff that's like gotta be hitting this stupid bishop really hard. And it kind of makes sense. Like, why would, after the things, the atrocities that you've committed, why would, beloved God protect you? Like, why would he love you at this point?
I love it because, and this is the demon that was given the speech later on, but this big demon, I don't know for sure. I think this, pretty sure this demon was voiced by Fred Tatasciore, which is the voice of Soldier 76 from Overwatch. But anyway, like, yeah, he's coming in basically saying, you call us demons, but like, you're no better than we are. And the bishop gets what's coming. And like, I was about ready to cheer and throw a party.
Yeah, I mean, because he's, I mean, even at the end of it, before he eats his face, he's just like, you know, you're telling lies in the house of God. It's no wonder he's abandoned you. And I thought that was just a really powerful way to end his. And it was, what's crazy is like, I felt like this bishop was going to be around for a while because of just how evil he was. But then I'm like, I wonder if he's going to turn into some kind of demon force or something because of that evil in his heart. But I don't know that that's the case, but it's just presumption just by how big a deal he was at first.
Yeah, who knows? The townspeople are winning against the demons here. Then, you know, actually, I don't remember exactly why they go in, but they go back into the catacombs.
Oh, because the ground starts like breaking around them, basically.
Okay, that's what's going
on. And so it starts crumbling and they just fall through the ground. And they would have died, but just from the fall alone. But Trevor like uses his whip to kind of grab Sifa, and then she turns her around so that she's able to use kind of a wind burst, a gust of wind, you know, from her magic and lighten their fall so that they can survive.
Yeah, I liked that. That was awesome. It was really quick action too. I mean, it's like if you blink, you're gonna miss stuff.
Yeah, Trevor is always like thinking on his feet. Like, he's very quick to act.
But anyway, when we say they, it's just Sifa and Trevor that fall in. So they land in the catacombs. And I think it's a different part of the catacombs. It's not where the Cyclops was.
Right, it's deeper down than Sifa was able to make it before she was turned to stone. And there's all these gears moving around and just things that it looks like Trevor's safe hanging onto, but then they start to collapse. So it's just constant falling here until they finally reach the ground where this tomb is. And
I like that he steps on the trap, and it's not so much a trap. He steps on the stone and it shifts.
The trigger, yeah.
Yeah, and then he goes, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And then like this coffin rises up and opens, and basically Alucard is inside. I was just like, oh, shit. But so Sifa is convinced that this is the sleeping soldier. And she's like, oh, he's going to help us, stuff like that. And Trevor's like, no, this isn't a sleeping soldier. This isn't a savior. This is a vampire.
It's a vampire, right.
And, well, I guess before that happens, like, Alucard is questioning Sifa. Then he turns to Trevor. He's like, are you in search of a mythical savior as well? And Trevor just goes, I fell down a hole.
Yeah.
But then, so Alucard's like floating in the air, and Trevor calls him a floating vampire Jesus.
Yeah, Trevor challenges Alucard, saying like, you know, I don't know what else is going to happen, but I need to kill you because you're a vampire, essentially. And he doesn't discriminate against one vampire from another. Like, they all need to die as far as he's concerned.
And Alucard lets it slip that he is the son of Dracula and Lisa.
Right.
He's like, this isn't just any vampire.
Yeah. If you're familiar with Vampire Hunter D, and maybe it's from other also kind of mythology stuff, but like, he's a Dunpeel, which would be a half vampire, half human. And so at this point, like, he is who they thought was a sleeping soldier, but they've thought this soldier was asleep for centuries or something. And he's just like, how long have you been here? And he's like, what year is it? And they give him the year, and he's like, well, maybe a year. And so this is kind of like disproving a lot of the theories that, you know, Sifa and that the others had thought was part of the legend. And so it's even discrediting what, you know, any kind of faith Trevor would have had in him being any kind of savior. So they start to fight. At a certain point, it's funny because Trevor kicks him knees him in the groin to try to knock him over. And he's just like, this isn't a bar fight. Have some class.
Yeah, I love that. That was good. Man, but dude, this fight was so good. And it was long. Like, I expected that this was going to be a short, you know, exchange with some quippy lines back and forth. But it was a long fight. And it was beautifully animated. And like the choreography of the, I say choreography, even though it's an animation, but it's so good. Like, yeah, it was planned so well. It looks so fluid. It ends with, like, Alucard has him pinned, and he's about to, like, bite Trevor's neck, or you think he's going to bite Trevor's neck. But when he leans forward, Trevor has a stake, and it's pressing into Alucard's chest. Well, hasn't gone through yet.
He's got his dagger, or his short sword, in his chest.
Yeah. And Alucard's, like, basically, like, oh, that's your plan? Like, even if you manage to stake me, I can still drain your blood. And we'll both die. Trevor just says this line. He says, killing you was the point. Living through it's just a luxury.
First, Sifa comes up with a spell over him saying that she'll incinerate Alucard.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
If he, you know, touches Trevor and, or before he's able to touch Trevor.
To bite him.
Yeah. And that's when they start to talk it out. And he does start to laugh and say, like, okay, well, you know, it's good that you've come along because, you know, part of this, you know, do you know the whole legend? He challenges her, and right. then he's just like, this the sleeping soldier is to be met by a hunter and a scholar, and you two fit the bill. So this is exactly what we need to defeat my father.
Right, exactly. So he's basically like, all right, let's do this thing. And that's when the series ends. And I was like, no.
Yeah, that's when the season ends. And I thought it was kind of a perfect way to close it out. Just leave you wanting more. With kind of an awesome walk out of the room together, we're a team now situation.
Man, yeah, it was good. And you know, though, that's the one complaint that this show has been getting, is that it built up to this big thing and then it ended and everybody's so pissed about it. But well, I'm like, but that's kind of the point, because they want a second season. Exactly. So of course they want to leave you on something like that and be like, yeah, if you want this, then we need a second season. But it was renewed for a second season on day one.
So. Yeah, exactly. With all the viewership it got and all the praise.
So it's coming. It's going to be
season two. It's going to be longer. 8 episodes.
Yeah, 8 episodes this time instead of 4. So that's awesome. And I think the episodes themselves might be longer. I'm not sure, but we're definitely getting more. And it just cannot come soon enough.
Seriously, so good. It looks like it's about time we grab our salt and holy water, then go wake our own little sleeping soldiers, aka our inner kids, so that they can protect us from the demonic hordes, then tell us what they thought of Castlevania.
Wow, this cartoon was awesome with all these demons and the blood and a big old fire Dracula, but even better was a hero I actually like. Trevor was super funny, and he can get beat up, but still kill all the bad guys, even when he's drunk. And Sifa's awesome, she's my new girlfriend. So I gave this cartoon 5 bowls of floating vampire Jesus cereal out of 5. Now, I gotta give this game a shot. Is there more than one?
This is a cartoon based on a video game about fighting monsters that was inspired by some of my favorite old horror movies. Seriously, what's not to like? The atmosphere is appropriately dark and creepy, the video game-esque nods are very much appreciated, and the characters layered and interesting. I love the fact that Dracula wasn't a typical villainous monster mindlessly killing humans for fun. We drove him to this and kind of deserved his wrath. Tragic, sympathetic villains are always much more intriguing. With all that said, overall, I'd give Castlevania 5 big bowls of Bloody Belmont Bite cereal out of 5 and can't wait to see season 2. In fact, I'm so excited about all this, I think I'll become a monster hunter myself. Since both salt and holy water can do the job, I'll just load my super soaker full of blessed ocean water and kill 2 bats with 1 stone.
That's really clever, using holy ocean water. I think that's a...
I wonder I like that if that idea. Would work, or I wonder if it has to be like the, I don't know, produced salt. I don't know. I've never seen it done, but I don't know. It has to have been questioned before, right?
You know what? Let's call up the Winchesters. They'll know.
Okay, sure.
So do you have any final thoughts about this show?
I was and am pleasantly surprised. Like, even on the second viewing of it, it was fantastic all the way through. It paid great respect to the video games themselves, and really, I think it's going to reinvigorate interest in this series all over again, so definitely check it out. Again, definitely shouldn't show your kids, because it is very bloody and mature, but that said, please do watch it, and let's hope for a season 3 after the next one comes out.
Yeah, this was amazing. This is a kind of show that I've been waiting for. Not only was the direction great, the voice cast was fantastic, the animation was just about flawless, and there was amazing action scenes, and like I said before, the choreography of the fight scenes were like some of the best I have probably ever seen from an animation. But for those that don't know, I'm a huge fan of things like the Diablo games, And Joseph and I have been playing a lot of this game called Grim Dawn. So I'm really attracted to those kind of properties. And I haven't really gotten to Castlevania before. So this was a great, like, hey, this is what this is. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm in. Anything battling demons and all that good stuff. So this was something I needed in my life. If I can't get a Diablo series of some kind, man, this is scratching that itch. So I cannot wait for season two. I'm so excited for it.
Yeah, and if, like you said earlier, the worst complaint about it is that it wasn't long enough, I think that can be taken care of.
Yeah, that's not even like a real complaint. I mean, come on. Like,
that's really stretching.
Yeah, yeah. And one quick thing. So we currently have 18 five-star reviews on iTunes, which is crazy.
Wow.
A huge thank you to everyone who has given us a rating.
Yes,
all 18 five stars. So if you haven't rated the show before, please help us out. And if you do like it, go to iTunes. And because I just want to get our reviews to 20. Even if you don't rate us 5, I want to get at least 20 reviews. So like I said, if you have iTunes, please do that. If you don't use iTunes for your podcast, please help us spread the word on social media, which would be the biggest help ever because we suck at social media. If you haven't noticed, if you follow us on social media, you know we're not very good at it because
we
don't post very often, which has been pointed out to us. But it's just because we're super busy in our real lives, like ridiculous. So that would be why. So any social media presence you can help us with, like that is the biggest way that you can thank us and we will be blessed for it.
Yes, please. You know, anything you want to give us, any feedback you want to give us, please do. I would hold off a little bit before you suggest more cartoons because we have so many. If you're going to suggest one at a time, please, because we have so many right now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're kind of at that point where, I mean, we're thankful for all of our suggestions and all of our listeners, but I mean, we have almost 50 requests right now, and there are several that are by the same people. So we're kind of at that point where we might have to just start eliminating some just so everyone gets a fair chance, because we want everyone to be able to get a show aired. So please only suggest one show for us at a time so that we can catch up and get to everybody.
Just one, please. Also, and I mentioned Carter earlier, and Carter, for anyone who doesn't know, is our, as far as we know, our youngest listener, but also someone who does fan art of our stuff. And I wanted to mention the latest fan art that he did, and his mother sent it over to us. I haven't posted it up yet, but I will, you know, about when this episode comes around so that it can be timed for that. But
yeah,
I wanted to thank him. I wanted to thank you. And again, you probably shouldn't have listened to this episode, period. But if you are listening still, Carter, But I wanted to thank you for drawing that. That was so awesome. And we love to see any more fan art that you have.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you so much. It's super like, it's really weird and in a good way. So we like it. It puts a huge smile on our face like that. Yeah. Literally, it makes our day because then we text about it all day and we're like, oh, it's so awesome.
Yeah. And all the cool callbacks you have to like earlier shows that we've done and things like that. And you made us Fraggles, which is always fun. So
he drew us as Fraggles. I like
Actually, not this time. He didn't. No, this time it was actual people. But he has drawn us as Fraggles before.
Yeah. He's drawn us as Fraggles twice, I think.
I think so. Yeah. Anyway, either way, awesome. I wanted to call it out. Thank you.
Thanks, Carter.
Well, listeners, looks like our milk supply is now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. And next week, we'll be watching
The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, suggested by Carter via YouTube. This is Totally Not the FBI or CIA via YouTube, and One Hot Cop via iTunes review. So this has been suggested by 3 people.
Oh, wow.
So we pretty much have to do it.
Dang, I didn't even know Carter suggested it. That was coincidence.
Yes, three people have suggested this cartoon, Carter being one of them. So we definitely got to get to it.
Yeah, there you go. Once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
We'll see you next Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth,
a place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.